might be localized in space, the wave is not localized. The wave is spread out. Okay, so a particle, say just a free particle, I take a little electron and I throw it like this, that particle is doing something. Okay, and as a particle, we would think of it as sort of localized, but as a wave, we think of it as, we describe it more or quantum mechanically, as some kind of a wave moving to the right with a momentum, or associated with a particle of momentum plus p, is this wave moving to the right with a wavelength lambda equals h over p. Okay, and then we realize that, okay, what if we stick this thing inside a box? Well, it's going to bounce around. Classically, it's going to just be oscillating back and forth like this. Quantum mechanically, we're going to get a reflected wave. Okay, so we're going to have a wave now moving to the left like this, associated then with a particle which moves to the left. Okay, and with the same wavelength. Okay, and if we take those two waves and add them together, what do we get? Standing waves. So we'll call this psi right. This is a wave moving to the right. And we'll call this guy psi left, a wave moving to the left like this. And what we discovered is that in terms of waves, we're going to have a superposition of those two waves and get a standing wave. In terms of particles, what it means is the particle is in this weird state in which it is simultaneously moving to the right and to the left. Okay, so we get this standing wave here. So this is our box. And we put the edges of the box, the boundaries of the two ends of the box, we locate them at two nodes. Okay, and suppose there's a node in between, so we're dealing with the first excited state. And so our standing wave looks like this. So it starts out like this, and then this side moves down, and this side moves up until eventually it's the negative of that. And then the whole thing just oscillates back and forth like this. Okay, and then we said, okay, let's interpret that wave. So this is what we'll call psi. So the sum psi, which is a function both of position x, this is the x-axis, and time. It looks different at different times. This is our psi right plus our psi left, a superposition. Okay, and then we said we interpret this thing, psi, as having something to do with the probability of finding the particle at a certain location. Okay, so that wave allows us to calculate the probability pattern. Okay, so we interpret the probability pattern, okay, which is a pattern in space x at any time t, is just the square of the amplitude of that wave. Okay, and we got that interpretation by looking at the double slit. Here we have a source of particles, and that source of particles we found there's some kind of a probability pattern, so it's likely to hit here but not likely there, and so on and so forth. And so we give up the idea of trying to follow the trajectory of any one of those particles, and we just accept the idea that all we can tell about what's going to happen is probabilities. And we calculate those probabilities by assuming there's some kind of wave with wavelength lambda coming through here, and we look at the corresponding psi, we square it, and we get p. Okay? So are we happy with that? Huh? Okay, so far we've been ignoring this time dependence. So we say, yeah, at t equals 0, say, the standing wave pattern looks like that. You know, later on, it's the negative of that. And still later on, we're back to the original pattern and so on. It's oscillating back and forth. So if you think about the time dependence of that wave and our interpretation of the square of that wave as a probability of finding the particle, are you still okay with that? Do you see there's any potential problem with that? Yeah, classical mechanics is out the window. But apart from that, we're okay with that? Think about what happens to this wave as time goes on. It starts out looking like this. What does it do as time goes on? Right. Okay. So the point is, at t equals 0, at time equals 0, our wave looks like this. Okay? And half a period later, the wave is going to have switched sign. This one will have come all the way down. This one will have come all the way up. So this is at t equals period divided by 2. Period is the total time it takes the wave to go down and come back up to its original position. That's capital T. Okay, so, and then also at T equals capital T, it's back to its original shape. But what happens at T equals, say, a quarter T, a quarter capital T? What does the pattern look like? It's just flat. It's just zero. So this has come down to zero, and that's going up from negative up to zero. Okay, so the problem is, say, for example, at T equals one quarter of a period, what we get is psi at that time is just zero. Okay, in terms of a classical wave, it's moving. This guy's going up and this guy's going down, or vice versa, but it's zero at that instant of time. So that means that the probability pattern, we just square that and we just get zero. Okay, so at this time, say T equals zero or capital T or big T over two or whatever, when we square this, we're going to get a pattern, you know, which looks something like this with two lumps like that. And we say, oh yeah, well that tells us that at that instant of time, if I look in that box, it's likely to be found around here or here, but not around the nodes. Okay, but then as time goes on, T equals a quarter, capital T, it's just zero. And there's no probability of finding the particle anywhere in the box. So where has the particle gone? Okay, but by definition, it ain't outside the box. By definition, this is a real hard boundary. Okay, we're not letting it outside. We're jamming it between our hands. We're not letting it out. It becomes a wave. But it already, in a sense, it's already behaving. We're already using wave ideas to describe its probability behavior. Goes to Hawaii. Vacation. Yeah. how many like that idea? That's absolutely correct. Okay, so yes, it enters another dimension, so to speak. It enters the complex dimension. Okay, so it turns out that these waves that we're talking so it turns out that these waves, which we've been thinking about as real waves, cosines and sines sort of moving through space, that pattern moving through space, turns out that the waves that describe particles moving through space, either free space or confined to a box, those waves are waves of complex numbers. Okay? These are waves, these are real number waves. The actual waves which describe particles are complex number waves. Okay, so let's look at these complex number waves. Okay, so here's the real axis. So just remember the idea of a complex number. So the idea of a complex number is this is the real axis, and this is the imaginary axis. A number that is real lies somewhere on the axis, on the real axis. A number that is pure imaginary lies somewhere on the imaginary axis. A general number, general complex number lies there. So if its real part is A and its imaginary part is B, then we say that that complex number is A plus I times B. And then we have all the weird things that happen with complex numbers when we multiply them together and all that stuff. So Stefan talked a little bit about that at the beginning. Okay, so what we have with a particle moving through space is there's a real part and there's an imaginary part. So let's first plot the real part. So what we're doing is we're imagining a particle. So this is actually the x-axis. So we're imagining a particle moving to the right along the x-axis. And so we're going to have a real wave like that for sure. Okay, so it's maybe a cosine wave. So we're taking a snapshot of the particle at one instant of time. And it's that wave distributed throughout space looks like this. Its maximum, say at this point, it's maximum. At this point, it's zero. At this point, it's negative maximum. This point it's zero, and so on. Okay, so the wave looks like that. If we were to let time run, that whole pattern would move to the right. Okay, so this is a wave moving with positive momentum. Okay, so it's like that. So now we have to add an imaginary axis here. Because the wave at any instant of time is not simply a real number, it's a complex number. So we add an imaginary axis here. Okay, and this is also a wave. Can anyone guess what kind of a wave is? If the real part is cos, what is the imaginary part? Sine. Good guess. Okay, and sine starts at 0, okay, and it will be maximum when cosine is 0. So it'll be maximum out here, and then it will come back. It will be 0 here, and then it will be, I always mess this up. Okay, so okay, it's a maximum here, and oops, no, it's 0 here, and then it becomes maximum back here, and then it becomes 0 here, and then it becomes maximum positive here, and then 0 here, and then maximum negative over there. Okay, so I'm drawing a wave coming out of the page at you along the imaginary axis, and it's a sine wave. It starts at 0. Okay, so that whole pattern moves to the right with the speed of the wave. And so if we take this snapshot, say at some instant of time, and we look at, say, the wave at that time, well, it has no imaginary part. It's all real. Okay, and so in our complex plane, it's some number on the real axis right over there. Okay, if we look further down, we see, oh, at this point, it has no real part, but it's maximally maximum imaginary part. So it has no real part, it's maximum imaginary part. Okay, and if we go further down, now it's no imaginary part, but it's all real, but it's negative maximum real. Okay, so it's negative maximum real with no imaginary part. And you can see as you go around, it actually just circles around. It goes around in a circle in the complex plane. That's how that complex number behaves. Okay, so how many would like to see the mathematics of this? Is that a majority, do you think?
Close enough.
Close enough. Okay. So I'll just write it down very, very quickly. So if we add those two waves together, we have a cosine wave and a sine wave. So it's okay, so I promised to keep mathematics out of these lectures, but so I'm introducing a tiny bit here, just only when it's a majority vote, or close to a majority vote. Okay, so this is what the wave looks like. So how many of you looked at that quantum exercise, standing and traveling waves, real? How many of you worked through some of that? Okay, a couple of you. Okay, so you might have seen this. So P is the physical momentum of the particle. E is the physical energy of the particle. H here with the bar through it, as Joost pointed out this morning, is just Planck's constant divided by 2 pi. Okay? And so this describes a wave moving to the right. It's a cosine, real. And then this describes a wave moving to the right, which is a sine. And then there's the pure imaginary unit there. Okay? So do any of you remember what Stefan said about the sum of cosine theta plus I sine theta? Where theta is just whatever junk you have inside the argument. What is that? Yeah.
Yeah. E to the I, all that junk.
Right. So this wave is just E to the power I times this junk. 1 over h bar px minus et. And a complex exponential, e to the I theta. Okay, so let me just write that out again. It's I theta, it's cos theta plus I sine theta. And so it's just a number which lies on the unit circle. If that angle is theta, then this is, of course, cos theta, and that's sine theta, which is a unit circle. Okay, and so that wave is really just a complex number on the unit circle. Okay, just moving back and forth and so on and so forth, just rotating around and around. Okay, so that's the sort of the mathematical expression for it. Let me show you a really cool applet. So this is an applet which was developed by a student of the first International Summer School. Actually, when it was just the Canadian Summer School, the Young Physicists of Canada, So this is one of your colleagues has developed this applet for your enjoyment here. Okay, so let's see here. Let me see if I can find it. Okay. So it's a great way to visualize a complex wave, what that actually is. Botan, yeah. He was Mr. Java. He was totally into Java, and he was like really good at it. And so he said, I can make a Java applet of that. And I said, cool, let's do it. Okay, so what you see here is this. Okay, let me just actually run the thing first, and then it'll be clearer. Okay, so play. Okay, so what you see on the left-hand side there, the red, you see two waves. I'll just turn it a little bit so that you can see that, in fact, there are two waves there, right? So so right now that's a cosine, and when that one's a cosine, the other one is a sine. So there's one sort of going up in this plane, and there's one in the plane that's perpendicular to that. And if one is a cos, one is a sine. Okay, and so that's this pattern over here. Okay, and then the idea is, well, how do we add the two of them up? We just add the two of them up as we would add up vectors. Okay, so at any point on this wave here, say at that point over there, okay, we're dealing with a complex number. Okay, so the real part of it is, say, a little arrow, say, along, it's a little arrow along the real axis, say, of that length. The imaginary part is a little arrow along the imaginary axis, say, of that length. And when we add those two arrows up, those two vectors up, we get a resultant vector, which is just at some angle. Okay, so you can see that the sum of these two arrows produces the sum of these two red arrows, the cosine and the sine, add up to produce a complex number at every point, having a real and imaginary part, which is just this yellow vector. Okay, and you'll see that the vector, as the wave is moving to the right, this is describing a wave moving to the right, right along here. You can see that it's sort of like a corkscrew. Okay, so it goes like this. Okay, so that's a that's how quantum mechanics describes a free particle moving along the x-axis with a corkscrew kind of wave like that. Okay, so I just want to remind you that this corkscrew wave is basically a superposition of right and left. Okay, so it's some sum of right and left. Okay, so now comes the question: what happens if we put that kind of a wave inside a box? Okay, so now here's our box, say between these two boundaries here, and we're going to have this wave. Hard to draw here, but it's this corkscrew type wave moving to the right. When that corkscrew wave moving to the right hits this boundary, what's going to happen? It's going to reflect, and we're going to have a corkscrew wave moving to the left. So what's present inside the box, in general, is corkscrew wave right, corkscrew wave left, both of them together. There's a superposition of those two possibilities, okay, plus momentum and minus momentum at the same time. So that's what we're going to do with the second part of this little applet here, is we're going to add two of these. Okay, so the purple is the left side of the box. The blue is the right side of the box. The particle classically is bouncing back and forth with some momentum plus p or minus p. But quantum mechanically, Botan is going to show us here a corkscrew wave coming in from the left here and a corkscrew wave coming in from the right. And then in the region in between, those two are going to overlap and they're going to add up to produce something. Okay, does anyone have any sense of what it might be? So a standing corkscrew wave, kind of, right? It's a standing wave of some kind, but there's something complex about it. Okay. Okay. So let's try it out here. So on the left here, you see the green traveling wave moving to the right. On the right, you see a blue traveling wave moving to the left. And when you add them up, you get that yellow, those yellow arrows. That's a pattern of the wave. Okay? And so what you see is exactly that kind of sine wave, that kind of standing wave sine wave, but we at one moment we see it sort of face on, at the next moment we see it in the pure imaginary. Okay, if we just could only access the real, we would see this thing, okay, blinking in and out of existence. Okay, but we see that it actually exists. It exists all the time. Once it's pure real, at one time it's pure real, a quarter of a period later it's pure imaginary. The next quarter of a period it's pure real but negative of it. Next quarter of a period it's pure imaginary, and so on. Okay, so that's that. So let's see. Where did that chart go? So a way to see this is, I'll just sketch it again here. So that's just the sine wave between the two nodes here. And this is real, and this is imaginary. And this pattern here, whatever pattern we got, if it's the lowest state, it's this. If it's the first excited state, it's this, et cetera, et cetera. That pattern rotates. Just take that pattern on a piece of paper like this and rotate it around through the imaginary. Okay, so here's a question. Sorry? So yeah, so it's a one-dimensional box, and the waving that's happening, well, let me ask you, if this is a one-dimensional box like this, when we were drawing these waves here, that's a standing wave. Did you have a problem with that? Were you okay with that?
Well, no, that
what's waving?
Yeah, that sort of shows like a numerical value each point.
Yeah, so don't, okay, like one way to think about this, like when you see pictures like this, the usual thing that picture is representing is a string, which is fixed at two ends like this, and you pluck the string like this, and it's vibrating in this standing wave pattern. Okay, so the vibration is actually, if this is the x direction, then in space, the vibration is actually in the y direction. Okay, well, that's not what's happening here. So there is no y direction. Okay, it's a one-dimensional system like this, and all we have is numbers. At every single point on the x-axis, we have different numbers, and we're just representing those numbers in some abstract space, which is not associated with real space. Okay?
So there is actually no change in the probability. It's always the same type of point.
That's the point. That's right. So what we're looking at here is the probability is only the length of those yellow arrows. And the length of those yellow arrows is static. Okay, and we're going to get to that. But first I want to ask you, what do you think is, let me just remind you here. So this describes, say, a particle with energy E. So remember we've got, there's zero, there's E0, the ground state, there's E1, the first excited state, E2, et cetera, and this is the energy E. Okay, so we've got a particle in some state. This diagram corresponds to this state, but it could be any state. So we've got a particle with some energy E, and we see this pattern, this fixed pattern, rotating in the complex plane. How rapidly does this pattern rotate? What is the frequency of rotation? What do you think that is? Yeah, it's 1 over capital T. How is it related to the energy, you think? What is that?
V is equal to Planck's constant by frequency.
Right. Okay, so Einstein's formula E equals Planck's constant times frequency. Frequency is just the energy of the particle divided by Planck's constant. Okay? So a particle that is in the ground state energy, well, a low energy is small, the frequency of rotation is going to be slow. It's going to rotate only slowly. Okay? If we stick it in an excited state, like up here, okay, so then the pattern looks like this, okay, and that whole pattern rotates around like this, around this axis, and it rotates around with a higher frequency. Yeah.
Maybe I'm like imagining it wrong, but Well, when it rotates, yep. Are there times when it's only an imaginary axis then?
Yes.
So then what happens at that point?
Nothing. Yeah, so there are times when it's just pure imaginary.
Like the whole thing.
Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah. Oh, what happened to it? It stopped.
Yeah, perfect for my example. We'll get lost as soon.
Okay. Okay, I think Lotan's program kind of crashed on us. Anyway, so I'll have to send him an email. Okay. So when it's in the real, we're okay with that, right? And you're having a problem when it's in the pure imaginary. But why don't we have a problem when it's at 45 degrees?
I'm fine with that.
But it's like partly imaginary, partly real.
Yeah.
I would think that'd be worse than like pure imaginary.
Well, I think both of these are bad.
Okay, so they're both pretty bad. Okay, so it turns out that what comes to save the day here is so remember that this brings out the point that this wave is a complex number. Do you see any complex numbers in the real world? Like, what is the temperature of this surface? Is it 4 degrees plus I7? No. So, like, all numbers that we see are real numbers, right? And so somehow, the wave that we're talking about here is complex. Okay, and so we have to convert a complex number to a real number. Okay, so how do we do that? So suppose we have the number, say 3 plus I4. Okay, so that's a complex number. What's the most natural way to convert a complex number to a real number? Multiply by its complex conjugate. Okay, let's multiply by its complex conjugate. So here's 3 plus I4 times its complex conjugate, 3 minus I4. So what's that? 3 times 3 is 9. 3 times 4 is 12. Negative I12. 3 times 4 is 12 plus I12. What's I times minus I?
Minus,
which is 1 plus 1. So it's plus 4 times 4 is 16. And notice that there is an imaginary part here and here, but they cancel. Okay, so you're left with a pure real number, which is 25. Okay, and if I take the square root of that, what is that?
5.
Okay, so by taking the complex number multiplying by itself, I'm taking 3 squared plus 4 squared. I'm really doing this squared plus this squared. I'm doing Pythagoras. Gives me this squared. So I take the square root, and I get that. So this is called the magnitude. So if I take a complex number like that and put bars around it, I mean take the magnitude. Take the length of that number. Take the length of that vector. Think of it as a little vector here. Take the length of that vector. And that's just a real number. Okay, so what we're interested in is just the length of those vectors. Okay, which brings us to the main point here, is that the length of those vectors don't change with time. Okay, so now when we take probability, so we used to think about it this way. We take the amplitude of the wave and we square it. And that gave us our probability pattern. That's fine for real waves. Okay? It'll convert a negative number to a positive number, and so our probability will be a real and positive number all the time. Okay, but when the waves are complex, what we need to do is take the magnitude first and then square it. So the probability is the magnitude of psi, just the length of those little yellow arrows in Botan's picture, squared. Okay? So in the example of Botan's amplitude there, the magnitude of those arrows is just a sine function like that. Okay, and when we square that, we get this shape over here. Okay, the point is that this is static. It doesn't change with time. In particular, it doesn't disappear. Okay, with the standing waves we were dealing with before, at a quarter period, they just disappeared. Okay, and the particle is nowhere to be found. Yeah.
Okay, so since these are static, right, and the magnitude always remains the same across the yellow, what difference does it make to us if it rotates? Like, why do we care about the rotates?
Good question. we will see why we care. Okay. So in and of itself, that's right. So if a particle is just in one of these states here, like maybe it's that state or that state, then yeah, we don't care about that. But what's the cool thing about quantum mechanics? What's the main idea?
That you can't know for certain anything.
I know.
Okay, that is a main idea. What's the main idea that we've been focusing on? It's possible for things to exist in multiple states at the same time, superposition. Okay, so we can put a system in, say, that state all by itself and just sit there, or in that state all by itself and just sit there, or we can also put it in a superposition of those, and that's one particle, and that's going to get cool. Okay, so anyway, so these states that we've been talking about so far, so if it's in this state by itself or this state by itself or whatever, the probability pattern does not change. The probability pattern is static. Okay, and so these are called stationary states. Okay, so we've solved the problem of the particle blinking in and out of existence. There is a, by the way, there's an exercise here which will lead you through some of the math involved in this.